In a world where options are limitless, but time is not, two heroes take a stand against injustice and overwhelming viewing choices, starring Jane Ellen and Adam Cravens, a podcast that lets you know what's worth watching and what's not. From the Hints and Oakley Podcast Center, this is Binge or Cringe.
Hello and welcome to Binge or Cringe. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
We have so much to talk about. First, I'm going to talk about with what I saw just hours ago, and it is called Prom.
I'm assuming it's about prom?
Yes.
All right.
It is on Netflix, and I'm going to have to look it up because it was a Broadway show, and I don't know who wrote it, and I need to find out because lyrically, it's fabulous. Just Matthew Sklar. Well, I should perhaps look that up. But anyway, Matthew Sklar is genius when it comes to lyrics. In a much like Lin-Manuel is genius, but this is a I'm going to say more Cole Porter-y in that you know what word's going to come next, and you're delighted that you know that he's going to, of course, use lesbian and thespian. There's a reason. I'll get to it. But more than that, there are some that aren't even that surface. And it is a delight.
Musicals really are a very refined, the good ones, at least. I think if you'll look at a lot of, and I'm bringing up Disney because they seem to be kind of the one that gets most associated with that stuff. The non-Disney films and their lack of success in the late 90s kind of shows you what, it's not just putting a musical out there that will necessarily get you eyeballs or money or box office or what. The film version of Rent, I would have assumed it would have done a lot better than it did.
Well, this, apparently Prom was on Broadway in 2018, and this version had a limited release in theaters, but not around here, on December 4th, and now it's on Netflix. Let me share just a few names in it. Do you know anything about it at all?
I don't.
Meryl Streep.
I've heard of her.
James Corden.
I know of him.
Nicole Kidman.
Wow, they do have quite the cast there.
Keegan-Michael Key. Okay, you don't know. Kerry Washington.
No, I do know who
Kerry Washington. Tracy Ullman. Mary Kay Place.
Man, they really kind of stacked the deck on that one.
I enjoyed it so much that I'm going to have to rewatch it because I know there were some lyrics that I did not hear. It's not all singing. Here, let me tell you what it's about. So,
Prom.
Meryl Streep, by the way, she's a pretty good actress. And imagine Meryl Streep as, oh, why can't I think of her name? I'm ready for my close-up.
Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, her. What that character?
I can't think.
Desda, whatever. So she is a three-time Tony winner who's not quite past her prime, but nearing it. Looks amazing, dresses to the nines at all times, and she is starring in a Broadway show with James Corden, and his character is playing FDR, and she is playing Eleanor Roosevelt in a Broadway musical called Eleanor. And
Eleanor, exclamation mark.
Pretty much. And so it begins at the after party where they're reading what's going on, and Eleanor closes the night it opens.
Ouch.
And it's funny. Oh, it's funny.
So it's a little bit of springtime for Hitler, if you will.
it's so funny. And so she's down. They're all down. And they said, well, we need something. We need something to get behind. We need a cause. And it turns out that there is this young lady in the Midwest, and she just wants to go to her prom. And it turns out that she likes the girls. And by the way, her girlfriend is not known to anyone. It's just she wants to take her girlfriend to the prom. And the principal is fine with it. But the PTA says that she can't because she would be in danger. And so the principal says, well, the prom should be all inclusive. And she says, I just want to go to the prom, you know? I don't want to be a big deal. I don't want to be the one you're going to point to and say, oh, it's because of her. It's like, I just want to go to the prom, all right? Just leave me alone. I just want to go to the prom. So things happen. She goes to the prom. She gets all made over by James Corden. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot the best part. They show up. These New Yorkers show up to small town America to open their minds, to teach them the way of jazz hands and Broadway, with a traveling group of players doing Godspell, which gets canceled. And there's so much, so many levels of comedy and just great pop sounding songs, but the lyrics are delightful.
One of the things that makes a lot of musicals kind of something that you can watch over and over again, it kind of gives you that renewed interest every time. I mean, in the same way that you can listen to an album while you're, you know, like cleaning or doing dishes or whatever, like musical, like, okay, most television shows, you need to kind of sit down to really appreciate, like you need to pay attention to what's going on there. Musicals, like I said, in the same way that like an album or anything like that, or, you know, your playlist, you can have that on in the background because you don't necessarily have to be watching, you know, the jazz hands or what have you on it. And from what you're describing to me, if the songs are on the level that you're describing, it is going to have some significant, like rewatch ability to it.
Absolutely. And really, I mean, you could project what the story is going to be, obviously, but it's just so good. Okay, the songs. I just want to give you some song titles to give you an idea. Oh, see, look, someone agreed. The true spectacular of the prom is its songs. Yeah, the songs. And just give me a list of songs for crying out loud. Yeah, yeah, heartwarming. I don't care. Give me the songs. Okay. Changing Lives. Eh, it's fine. Changing Lives is how Meryl Streep and James Corden's characters talk about, because they're, you know, actors and they're changing lives. It's pretty funny.
Well, I mean, again, like your song itself is always going, but when you've got talent like Meryl Streep and James Corden, like, they're also people that can elevate material that might not be as impressive without. If you've got good material and good performers, like, it's only going to make everything better.
They're not giving me any lyrics from these, but It's Not About Me is where you have Meryl Streep singing about how they're here to help Emma, and then saying It's Not About Me, the Meryl Streep character, when it's clearly about her, and she is magnificent. Now, I know you might not have heard that word connected with Meryl Streep, but magnificent. The whole thing is a delight. And as I'm watching it, I'm, of course, thinking of you, Adam. And I thought, you know, Adam doesn't really love musicals, but he would love this musical.
You may be the first person that's ever watched a musical and thought of me.
Yeah, I totally was. I have to.
I'm pretty certain. Or, I mean, if anybody has, I've never had it indicated to me, at least.
You have to. You just have to. So anyway, Prom, The Prom, whatever, is on Netflix right now, and you need to see it. The end. You need to see it.
That's about as glowing a review as you can give something.
It's delightful. It really, really is. You're listening to Binge or Cringe, brought to you by Hinson Oakley Family Dentistry. Jane Ellen talking with Adam Cravens about what is worth watching in the streaming media. And we're going to talk about a few things on this point. First, I don't want to forget, Mank is also on the Netflix,
which is David Fincher's latest movie. You have undoubtedly heard of something he has done. Seven, Alien 3, The Game, Panic Room, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl. He is one of the more gifted directors working today. And I'm assuming with the darkness that he likes to go to, or subjects that make people uncomfortable, I'm guessing films that he wants to make are getting more and more difficult to make. So an outlet like Netflix is probably very attractive to him.
Well, this particular, this is, you may have heard of the name Mankiewicz, but you've probably heard of Joseph Mankiewicz. And Joseph Mankiewicz is in here, but this is Herman Mankiewicz. Herman Mankiewicz was an amazing writer and an extraordinary alcoholic.
Oh, well, I guess we buried it as well. It's about kind of the making of Citizen Kane.
Yes, and the guy who is playing Orson Welles, he without doing an imitation of Orson Welles, he captures his tone and his look, and you know, there are no prosthetics or anything. It's just he's got it, and it's delightful. So yes, it's all about how Mank is how everyone calls him, how he wrote Citizen Kane, and he was just writing it without credit, and how he then ended up winning an Oscar for it, for the screenplay that he wrote that he had to share with Orson Welles.
I don't know Orson Welles personally.
Mm-hmm.
However, everything that I have ever read about him and seeing as he's an individual that, like, you know, wrote, produced, starred, mm-hmm. directed, he seems like he enjoys himself
a lot.
A lot.
Yes.
Like a lot, a lot. Like, yes. He's not one of those people that's like, no, you're the real hero.
No.
Like, I just helped you out. Like, you're the real hero. I don't need any of this credit. Like, I'm assuming he liked seeing his name. He enjoyed mm-hmm. the sound of his voice. And in the same way that Kevin Reynolds and Kevin Costner had difficulty working, and Kevin Reynolds at one point said, well, from now on, he can work with his favorite actor and director himself.
Yes.
I assume that Orson Welles shared that with Kevin Costner.
Yes. And you get to see a great deal of Richard Randolph Hearst. And then you explain to your children who Patty Hearst is, and no one's listening at that point. But it's how Herman Mankiewicz interacted with these people and why he chose to pattern the whole thing after William Randolph Hearst. And it's fabulously done. It's filmed in black and white, and it certainly is worth your time, even if you don't know who all these people are.
Which is also probably a no-go for theaters nowadays. Like, Fincher, who also directed Fight Club, likes to make movies that don't necessarily have marquee value. Like, he's not going around going,
I thought it was brilliant.
Well, there's no shortage of brilliance
mm-hmm.
in his movies. They're just not necessarily bankable in the same way that me going, all right, James Cameron wants to make a movie about robots that fight blue things and there's explosion. Like, that has a dollar value mm-hmm. right there. Like, both of them are excellent directors. It's just David Fincher likes to pick subjects that, like, you don't necessarily want to show up to 70, 80, you know, $90 million opening weekend mm-hmm. for. It doesn't mean that he isn't brilliant. It doesn't mean that his films aren't good. But say, like, the last film that he released on a very commercially viable
day. Didn't he do Blue Velvet?
I don't believe so. But, I mean, he did Girl with a Dragon Tattoo that was released on Christmas. And that film, for as much as you and I like to celebrate Batman Returns and Die Hard, which are not traditional Christmas movies, man, if you have not seen Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, that film is dark.
David Lynch, see?
There we go.
That's how I mixed it up.
David.
Yeah. David. Yeah. Okay. So, Mank, you need to seek out because it's a good movie.
And, I mean, if you've got Netflix, like, it didn't go to theater, so, like, literally is the only place that you can see it.
It's just a good movie.
And I want to say it opened on the streaming giant very recently.
Yeah.
So it's still even new to there.
And it's worth your time. Now, it's not the kind of thing that you can really have on while you're doing stuff.
No, Fincher definitely, like, most of his work requires that you're paying attention to it or you will lose just mountains of information and be sitting there going, wait, what's going on now?
And I can say that I enjoyed it at a different level because I know who all those producers and directors are. And I know some of what they're already talking about and some of it I didn't know. But you don't have to have that knowledge to realize it's a good movie.
It's, you probably get a little bit more from it, but it doesn't necessarily, like, all of his films are very easily, like, cerebral. Digestible. Like, okay, Zodiac. You don't have to know everything about the Zodiac Killer to enjoy that movie.
Didn't I just read a headline that I did not click on that said they finally figured out the code?
And, I mean, you may have. I don't have access to your eyes or your memory, so...
Whatever.
And I don't have your phone bugged, so I'm not sure, but that's something somebody that would bug your phone would probably do.
I mean, I thought I just read something today and you should tell me the Zodiac 340 cipher cracked by code experts 51 years after it was sent. So that was one day ago.
Okay. So you did. You did.
I still haven't read that, but I did read the headline several times, and I thought, I need to go and read that.
Also another enjoyable movie. It's got Robert Downey Jr. in it. David Fincher directed. It's about the Zodiac Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting movie that did not break all the box office records. Then you would assume hearing names like Fincher and Robert Downey Jr. in it, but this is also like pre-Iron Man, before like RDJ was beloved.
Speaking of RDJ, I did watch Everything Wrong with Doolittle.
Doolittle? Was it 2 hours? Did they just show the movie?
It seemed. Oh, it was so awful. And it was maybe 14 minutes long. Adam, I didn't realize the amount of suffering that you had all over you when you watched that movie.
Like, I had a tremendous amount of respect for the writer-director, and I've spoken on many occasions about how much I enjoy Robert Downey Jr. The voice cast is ridiculous. Antonio Banderas shows up on it, and there's a dragon. All of this sounded like such a good idea, and then you watch it, and you're like, oh, it's a burning dumpster fire of baby diapers.
And yet, because it came out before everything shut down, is it not one of the highest grossing movies
of the
year?
It is in the top 10 highest grossing films of the year.
Yeah.
But I mean, pretty much anything released in January or February is that. Like Sonic the Hedgehog, Bad Boys for Life, which were both actually like entertaining movies, are also up there. And more than likely had the normal... Mm-hmm. summer been allowed to, like, those films would have dropped down considerably. But as it was, Doolittle was a major release, and however much money it may have lost Universal, they can still at least
put on
whenever they re-release it to no acclaim, they can put on there one of the top 10 films of the year. And they're not technically wrong.
Yeah, I have to say don't little. I have to. Now, I want to make sure I get this one right. There's another thing that you need to seek out because it really is much better than you may be thinking that I'm going to say it is. And it is on Disney Plus. Oh, I was going to get the name right, and I'm clearly not. It's about godmothers, but not, you know, that type.
I think I saw something pop up on Disney Plus when I was hurriedly trying to find Mandalorian so I could watch the newest episode of it.
Yes, it is simply called Godmothered. And it's a good movie, but it is better than I expected it to be. I expected it to be pleasant.
Disney movies can usually at least claim that.
Yeah. I didn't expect it to be, oh, this is amazing. I just thought it would be pleasant. And Godfathered is about this, well, you know, fairy godmothers are real. And Jane Curtin is the fairiest godmotheriest of all of them, which I love.
I can see that.
And so she wrote the book on being a fairy godmother. show you the book. And it is narrated by this younger fairy godmother. And she's not officially a fairy godmother. She's still taking the class. And all the other fairy godmothers are much longer in the tooth. And they're much over it. And apparently, Happily Ever After isn't working. And much like all now, the other Disney stuff.
Is Happily Ever After a place? Is it
just
a,
in general?
Is it like when I see a Christmas movie and they're like, there's no Christmas cheer. That's the reason why the North Pole doesn't have energy.
Yes, it's exactly
okay,
like that.
All right.
Because Happily Ever Afters just aren't really working. All of the fairy godmothers are going to have to become tooth fairies.
Is that looked down upon?
Well, they want to grant wishes. And the things they're taught to do is a sequin gown turns the frown upside down.
Okay,
and so they have to make a gown, and then they have to, you know, turn pumpkins into carriages, and then they have to get to the Happily Ever After.
I mean, isn't in the same way that, like, Kramer was making claims of being an anti-dentite?
Yes.
Is saying that about tooth fairies not is that not some sort of like derogatory slur?
I feel Stephen Merchant should have been there to explain.
I mean,
I
feel like it. I don't know though.
So here's the fun part, and when it's done well, it's always entertaining. But you have the fairy godmother in training. She has found a letter from an 11-year-old girl who wants this, and this, and her happily ever after. And so she goes through the portal to help the girl. Turns out she's not 11 anymore. She's like 35. And you've aged. Have you seen yourself? Anyway.
That's kind of it. I mean, honest to goodness, if you're writing that blurb and like this is a high concept comedy mm-hmm. from like the late 80s or early 90s, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah. Like, so you've got the fairy godmother in training who is in her gown the entire time. And she would be, when you're watching her, you're going, she looks so familiar. It's like, oh, it's a much younger Kathy Najimy character, but not quite her, but her. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, vaguely, yes. Like this,
it's
a very interesting description of an individual that's not actually the individual
yes.
that you're talking about.
And that's exactly what she's doing. And she's fun, she's funny, and she makes everything better. And so the whole thing is about how she has failed making the happily ever after because she only had 48 hours, and if she does not make that happily ever after, then she cannot return, and she loses all of her magic. So that is the whole thing. Can she do the happily ever after? She's got the time constraint. And then, of course, Jane Curtin is all, rah, 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 rah. And then she goes and gets her, and stuff happens, and
why,
there you go.
Why is stuff in film, like, okay, in the 1999 Mummy, they're just like, oh, we wanted to curse the priest because he did this. But if he's allowed to do this, he becomes an unkillable monster that could control the world. And I'm just like, wait, well, why didn't you just do something more traditional to torture him instead of having that little caveat there at the end where they're like, he could become an all-powerful, like, demigod that terrorized people, and it gives him limitless powers. And they're like, well, why don't we just not do that? And instead, like, I don't know, tie him up by his toes, like mm-hmm. water torture him or something? I mean, why don't we do that instead of maybe making him immortal?
They
don't get into that part where they're just like, the magic will disappear. And I'm like, well, can we take the timer off it? Like, is this just the trial version? Like, what can we do? Can't it just be there?
No.
All right.
So this is the kind of film where I think if you have children who are initially not interested, dare I say 10-year-old boys.
I can see that.
Who you might be forcing to watch it. I believe there's enough comedy that it's just, I'm not going to say it's super fun. I enjoyed watching it more than I thought I would. I thought I simply wouldn't hate it. But I enjoyed watching it. And I think that for a family thing, you will find that more family members will enjoy it than maybe at first when you go, oh, we're going to watch Godmother. And they're going to go, oh, no, we're not. I think they would enjoy it.
Unexpected expectation. can be a good thing. And I do have to wrangle my boys very often into convincing them. Like, funny enough, like we've been on a Harrison Ford kick right now, and we watched The Fugitive, and Canyon's like, how many more? They're like, is this like Indiana Jones and there's five of them, or, you know, whatever? And I'm just like, no, there's only two, and the second one's not quite as good. But like, Harrison Ford's his own franchise, buddy. Like, you can really watch just about any Harrison Ford movie. Then I'm just
except that one when he crashed a plane with
6 days, seven nights.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and it's even directed by Ivan Reitman.
Yeah. Ivan Reitman is behind Godmothered. And that is why it is pleasant.
Man, how did we tie that? Wow.
Yes, well,
boom.
Yeah. When I saw Reitman, I went, well, I assume it was maybe it was his kid. Reitman is involved. And he was sandwiched between two other people, but a Reitman was involved.
That one sounds a lot more like Ivan Reitman. Like, his son tends to like the more dramatic, material. Like, most of Ivan Reitman's stuff was that, like, you know, the president gets somebody that looks just like him in there, and he's not a jerk. You know, My Superhero X, like Ghostbusters, like, those are the kind of movies he liked to do. His son seems to kind of skewer away from that, except for the upcoming Ghostbusters,
which, again, we would pay $40 to see right now. Maybe even $60.
So angry that I haven't already watched it 9 months ago.
It's got Paul Rudd. Anyway, Godmothered was a lovely surprise on Disney Plus. And speaking of Disney Plus, what's coming soon? By soon, I mean the next 8 months.
I mean, and keep in mind when you say what's coming, like, Disney basically just did a drop, like a significant, just a thunderous thud of a drop.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow. Star Wars, Marvel, I mean, they just like, some of the stuff I knew was in the pipeline. We've got a Lando with the one from Solo, which is probably the closest we're going to get to a sequel.
Really? See, I haven't read all of it. I was just watching the Loki trailer over and over.
It's Lando, like, not Billy Dee Williams.
For the same actor from the Solo movie?
Yeah, yeah.
He was magnificent.
Solo was actually magnificent.
Yeah, he was really good.
But, like, even in watching that, after it failed to meet box office expectations, I was just sitting there going, man, that's really, like, he nailed it as Lando Calrissian, like, in a way that I did not think you would be able to recapture that. But he's getting his own show.
Do you think maybe What's-His-Face will pop in as Han?
He doesn't seem to be doing quite as much. I
like him.
I mean, I'd watch it. I mean, and if Hayden Christensen's going to be in the Obi-Wan show.
Yeah, for how long? I don't know any of my feelings on that yet. I have to work that out.
I don't think all of the issues in the prequels are his fault.
They're not. By the way, did you watch that beautiful trailer that I sent you?
I did.
It's the Obi-Wan set to Cheers, where everybody knows your name.
Which is absolutely something I would watch.
Yeah.
Like a Cheers-style something set in the Star Wars, like, universe.
Cheers.
I'm in.
Anyway, if you haven't been watching The Mandalorian, you're a fool. Or maybe you just haven't found the time. I highly recommend it.
It
gets better with every second.
Like, and as somebody that's not, like, even, like, I am not a Boba Fett, like, loyalist. Like, I was not one of those people that's like, oh, he's fantastic. I've always maintained that the guy was kind of a goober that got shot by a blind guy down into a Sarlacc pit. Like, Boba Fett never did anything cool in the movies. Everything that you're basing this on is in, like, cartoons and books that aren't canon. Now, technically, Boba Fett is cool in canon, like, because it happened live action. And, man, if you did not see this episode, like, the Fett was on, kids.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Just thrilled and delighted all the way around. So, see? Good news.
Let's see, the What If series for the Marvel characters. Basically, What If was a comic book that would just ask questions like, what if this had happened to this character instead, or, you know, what if this character had died? So you're going to get to see them exploring that, but within the MCU, which, like, you know, what if Stephen Strange had become Iron Man? Or, like, there's so many, you can literally do whatever, like, looked like in the preview, one of them's what if Peggy Carter had have become Captain Britain instead of Steve Rogers becoming Captain America. Like, it's right for whatever story you want. As long as you can come up with a cool concept that kind of flips something we know traditionally on its ear, like, you've got, you know, 45 minutes, an hour long, whatever, like, within the concept of that. Captain America, or not Captain, Winter Soldier and the Falcon. WandaVision, which looks to be setting up Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Thinking Wanda is probably going to be the one that creates the Multiverse of Madness. She's what it looks like is she has created this own, like, dimensional reality where Vision isn't dead and they live together happily in this sitcom style environment. And funny enough, the guy that played Quicksilver, not in Age of Ultron, but in X-Men Days of Future Past, has been cast in that.
As Quicksilver?
They're not saying.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, as much as they are named, like, if you have been listening to any of the casting decisions from Spider-Man 3, like, Dr. Octopus from Spider-Man 2 is back, Electro from The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is back, reportedly, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield are in this, like, apparently, like, this is going to be like just the throwdown of all Spider-Man movies, but you've got to open the multiverse somewhere, and it either happens in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, or we probably get a hint of it when Wanda, who has been crushed because her brother, whom she was closest to, and her lover, husband, boyfriend, I don't know exactly what you want to call Vision, but, like, both of these people died
don't
pretty
ever
tragically.
Say the word lover again.
I don't, I wasn't sure exactly what to. All right. But I'm just saying, like, how cool would it be to see her bring Quicksilver back into existence, but somehow she does it.
So we call her Wanda now and not the Red Witch?
Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch.
I mean, it's called WandaVision. I'm sure that's what her friends call her. I mean, she almost took Thanos out. So, like,
I know, but I don't remember everyone saying, "Hey, Wanda, what up?"
Well, I mean,
or is that
they
just
didn't.
From reading?
That's probably from reading.
Okay.
But I mean, like, that's her name. Like, that's what.
Don't wear it out.
You know, Peter and Wanda. That's what's what they called each other. But this one. Like I said, this show looks really interesting, and I'm thinking she probably gets a little separated from reality and creates her own here.
That sounds super fun. Well, I look forward to watching a whole lot more TV.
Or at the bare minimum, Disney Plus.
At the bare minimum. So, you have a lot to watch, so try and keep up. Thank goodness. Thank you for listening to Binge or Cringe. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Craven.
You've been listening to Binge or Cringe. Download your favorites and keep up with new episodes in the Hints and Oakley Podcast Center.